is Polyphonic Press, the podcast where two music fans pick a classic album completely at random. Using the patented random album generator, they are given an album to review from a curated list of over 1,000 classic releases, spanning multiple genres. And now onto the show. Here are your hosts, Jeremy Boyd and John Van Dyke.
Hey, welcome to Polyphonic Press. I'm Jeremy Boyd.
And I'm John Van Dyke.
And let's not waste any time. We've got the patented random album generator right in front of us here. So let's hit the button and see what album we're going to be listening to this week. And the album we're going to be listening to is Television, Marquee Moon. But I am kind of familiar with the album. I do know some of the songs on it. It's sort of like it's very similar to like Talking Heads sort of stuff. But this is what it says on allmusic.com. It says, Marquee Moon is a revolutionary album, but it's a subtle, understated revolution. Without question, it is a guitar rock album. It's astonishing to hear the interplay between Tom Verlaine and Richard Lloyd. But it is a regular guitar rock album, unlike any other. Where their predecessors in the New York punk scene, most notably the Velvet Underground, had fused blues structures with avant-garde flourishes, Television completely stripped away any sense of swing or groove, even when they are playing standard three-chord changes. Marquee Moon is comprised entirely of tense garage rockers that spiral into heady intellectual territory, which is achieved through the group's long interweaving instrumental sections, not through Verlaine's words. That alone made Marquee Moon a trailblazing album. It's impossible to imagine post-punk soundscapes without it. Of course, it wouldn't have had such an impact if Verlaine hadn't written an excellent set of songs that conveyed a fractured urban mythology unlike any of his contemporaries. From the nervy opener, See No Evil, to the majestic title track, there is simply not a bad song on the entire record. And what has kept Marquee Moon fresh over the years is how Television fleshed out Verlaine's poetry into sweeping sonic epics. All right. So the album, it was released on February 8th, 1977. The genres are rock, post-punk, art punk, new wave, and garage rock. And it was produced by Andy Johns and Tom Verlaine. So if you're listening along, which we encourage you to do, we usually take a break halfway through the album, and there are eight songs, and side one and side two are split evenly, four and four. The album opens with See No Evil, and side two ends with Marquee Moon. So if you want to stop it after Marquee Moon, that's when we'll do our midway discussion. I have linked the album below to both Apple Music and Spotify, so you can hear it on your preferred streaming service. Without further ado, here is the first song on Marquee Moon called See No Evil. Here we go. Okay, and ending side one with the title track, Marquee Moon. This is fantastic. I'm really, really enjoying this. I never thought I wouldn't enjoy it, but I am really enjoying it because it's so different than anything else that came out at this time. It's so different than any other punk, new wave, whatever you want to call it. It's definitely more melodic, and the instrumentation is amazing. Like they're really good players and really interesting writers. And I think it's just, it's really well put together.
No, yeah, I'm enjoying it too. His voice was a little bit hard to get used to at the beginning, but I'm starting to, you know, sort of get it, I guess. But yeah, so far, you know, the tracks have been pretty much winners right to play through. There's only been four so far, but still, I think two of my favorites are already picked, but we'll see.
I really liked the last track, Marquee Moon. It didn't feel like a 10-minute song, even though it was kind of repetitive. But the middle section, the middle instrumental section, where it kind of builds up into this crescendo, I suppose, you know, it just, that was like really, like it just, the intensity was building and then it drops and then it goes back into the rest of the typical groove of the song. I really, really enjoyed that. Really interesting, like almost jazz stuff going on with the guitars, the two guitars and the bass, like the melodies that they're doing, they're kind of playing off each other.
Yeah, it is sort of interesting. I guess you could paint it most like definitely sort of a jazz influence, what they're doing. But yeah, I definitely can hear the influences. Well, these guys definitely influenced a lot of people who had, you know, as post-punk in later years, definitely throughout the 80s.
Yeah, I can hear that for sure. Yeah, I can hear that. I can hear, Tears for Fears in there a little bit. Yeah. I like a lot of the more artsy stuff that would happen in the 80s. Yeah, and the, at the time that it was released, it was really critically acclaimed, but there weren't a lot of reviews on it. The in NME, Kent wrote that television had proven to be ambitious and skilled enough to achieve new dimensions of sonic overdrive with an inspired work of pure genius, a record finely in tune and sublimely arranged with a whole new slant on dynamics. He deemed the album's music vigorous, sophisticated, and innovative at a time when rock is wholly conservative, which I agree with. I mean, you know, this has sort of a looseness to it.
The parameters of punk was almost sort of like, they were sort of rigid, but there's been a lot of bands even at that time that sort of broke the mold a little bit and would, you know, branch out beyond what was known primarily as punk. But I think these guys are doing it a little bit more. Like you said, it's artsier.
Yeah, no, it's funny because they were one of the first bands to be heavily featured at CBGB's, and they were sort of there at the beginning of the New York punk scene in the late 70s. And like, cause this came out in early 77 and they were around New York in like 73, 74 around there.
Oh, wow.
So, yeah. So they were really
they were around when glam was a thing.
Yeah. So they were taking influences from all sorts of places, you know. I think we said this at another point too, and it's funny. Is you don't a lot of these bands don't know they're doing something new; they're just sort of doing what they do.
Yeah, exactly.
I don't think they knew that they were a punk band. They were just a band that played music, and they happened to be in the New York punk scene while all that was happening, and they were sort of grandfathered in.
They were sort of grandfathered in, but even more than that, they didn't know they were a post-punk band.
Right, yeah, exactly, because punk hadn't really happened yet, or at least, you know, the late 70s version of it. The album didn't do well commercially, but it, like, if it were released today, like, what do you think it would be like if it were to be released like, even now, do you think it would it do anything?
It's so hard because we're talking about a very influential album that influenced a lot of things that came after it. And a lot of those things, if it was released after those things, it's hard to imagine those things even being around. It's very tough to try and picture a world where this comes out later, because it's very of its time.
Yeah, I think maybe not now, but maybe 10 or 15 years ago when bands like Franz Ferdinand were around.
Oh, okay. Yeah, okay. I can definitely hear it amongst the sort of the garage rock revival of the early 2000s. I can definitely hear it amongst that. But obviously it influenced. Yeah, I can hear like Franz Ferdinand sort of in this. The style of singing, even the style of guitar in a lot of ways.
Yeah, I think one thing that they probably wouldn't be able to do is like the song, the title track, Marquee Moon. I don't think that they would be able to make a 10-minute song nowadays, especially not out for the radio.
No, not for the radio, but I could definitely. Yeah, it wouldn't be the one of the signature tracks off it, probably.
Yeah, and it influenced so many bands. I mean, even Sloan wrote a song
called "The Marquee and the Moon,"
which is a tribute to this album.
Once again, it's one of those albums where the musicians know about it, and a lot of other people ignored it. It's such a common gripe of mine. But I guess that's just the people who would appreciate that sort of a thing anyway.
Exactly. I mean, and it's the type of people that, you know, somebody's walking along the street in New York and they happen to, you know, just go into CBGB's and they see the band playing and they like them. But, you know, it's never going to, like, I think the big problem was, I think the record company maybe didn't know how, because this came out on Elektra Records, which was a pretty major record label. And I think maybe they just didn't know what to do with it. They didn't really know how to market it because it is so different from anything else that was going on at the time. It's like, well, okay, we know how to market punk rock and we can do that. We know how to market prog rock. We know how to market like soft rock. We know how to market disco. We know how to market, singer songwriters, but I don't know what to do with this.
Well, I think, you know, marketing it as a punk album probably would be their best bet. But again, because it's so early on, even doing that would have been a little bit hard for them because marketing punk, which is really yet to get into its full swing of things, was still a little beyond them. But I still think, like, this found an audience amongst punk fans. The band certainly was, you know, accepted in the circles and stuff like that because they weren't that different. But they were definitely more experimental, say the Ramones or something like that. Ramones being probably the most extreme example of straight ahead punk
in that scene. Yeah, for sure. I did manage to find a few interesting facts about the album. So part of the marketing was to book a tour with Blondie in the UK. However,
There's a band that actually did a lot of experimentation.
They did. However, Chris Stein, the guitarist for Blondie, said that Television were quote unquote so competitive and unaccommodating on the tour and that they did not treat it like a joint effort. He recalled one show where all our equipment was shoved up at the Glasgow Apollo and we had like 3 feet of room so that Verlaine could stand still in this vast space. So they kind of were not the nicest people. and a little bit full of themselves, which I'm thinking is part of the reason why Elektra maybe didn't want to deal with them. It sucks when bands can't get along on a tour.
Usually two sides to a story like that, but I'm trying to figure out what the other side would be for something like that, because it definitely doesn't sound a reasonable thing to do.
No, it doesn't. And, you know, there might have been certain substances being used
to make
people behave a certain way. Another fact, the title was inspired. The inspiration for the title came from, they're not originally, a lot of the guys in the band aren't originally from New York. They came to New York and noticing all the light pollution. So instead of seeing the real moon, you see the marquee moon. So that's where the title comes from.
I was a little bit, you're an odd phrase, marquee moon. But when you explain it as being light pollution, that kind of actually makes sense.
Oh, yeah. And this is, it didn't, though it didn't sell well, it was a highly influential album among artists such as the Pixies, Sonic Youth, and REM, among many others.
Yeah.
And this is interesting. And this is, I think, part of why it was a bit of a hindrance. Is despite being over 10 minutes long, the title track was released as a single on a 7-inch, but it had to be split up between side A and side B.
Yeah, I figured that probably was the case.
So they didn't make a radio edit, which is pretty typical for longer songs. They just put the whole thing out as a single, and you know, and probably DJs didn't want to deal with having to flip the record over halfway through the song, so they just didn't play it.
Yeah, that could be. Yeah, because it would be definitely awkward, because how could you do that? You'd have to have two singles on two record players, and as soon as one ended, you have to be like right on the dot, needle right in the right spot. I mean, you have to be one hell of a DJ. I mean, even in the mixing kind of DJ, which a lot of DJs in the radio stations weren't at that level. They were just playing songs.
Yeah, to just get it right, you know, and to make it sound like to the listener, there's no transition. Like, it's almost impossible. So, yeah, so those are some interesting little facts about the album that I found. All right, let's get into the second side of the album. But before we do that, let's hear from our friends over at Abandoned Albums.
Our mission at Abandoned Albums is simple. As simple as this ad. Our only goal is to keep the recorded work of artists on the cultural radar and showcase new artists who should be on the cultural radar. Some things in life are truly that simple. With our tongue firmly in cheek, it's why we say, Abandoned Albums is the only music podcast that matters, and it's available wherever you get your favorite podcasts.
All right, and ending the album with Torn Curtain. Yeah, I mean, this is a really pretty fantastic album overall. I don't think there's really a bad song on here. I think it's really well put together. It has the feeling of being loose, but also really well planned out.
Yes, indeed. I think that's exactly right. Because it's definitely still on the looser side. It's still kind of punk. But yeah, there's obviously been a lot of, you know, thought and planning going into it. And it's not just, you know, it's not just slapdash, whereas, you know, a lot of punk can sort of come across that way. Whether it was that way or not, it sometimes comes across that way. Yeah, I think this is a pretty good album. I've I really enjoy the guitar work in it. There's a lot of fun licks and stuff like that.
Yeah, no, yeah, me too. I mean, and the guitars, I like the counter melodies between the guitars. Like,
yeah.
It's not really harmony, it's...
They're playing off each other.
Yeah, they're playing two different melodies off of each other, yeah. And I like, and as far as the production goes, I like how sparse it is. I like that they didn't, you know, and I like when they do it, but I like it didn't need it here. I like that they didn't layer the guitars, because a really good trick, if anybody's looking to record guitars, is you record, if you want it to be like a stereo image, and you have two guitar parts, you have one guitar on the left and one on the right, but you can double the two guitar parts. So, you know, you play it twice and have it sort of have them panned at different levels. That's a really cool way, and it gives this sort of huge guitar sound. But I like that they just went with, okay, one guitar here, one guitar here, one on the left, one on the right. And this, like the way they used the stereo imaging was, it gave each guitar breathing room, and you could hear them blended together, but you can also focus on one or the other. I like that they kept the a lot of space for everything to sort of have room. I like, you know, the bass was really high in the mix, and I was playing, like, you could hear everything.
That late 70s, you know, production sound to it. An album that's so, you know, influential to post-punk. I mean, post-punk production generally sounds completely different than this. But obviously, still, it's the conveyance of what the band is actually doing still comes across as a similar approach to what you would find later on in post-punk and stuff like that. I really enjoyed this. I guess my three favorites, probably Friction, Marky Moon, and Elevation. So yeah, three right in a row there.
That's a good run. Those three songs are a good run. Yeah. For me, it's tough. I keep going back and forth. I'm definitely Marky Moon, because I really like that the long instrumental section in the middle.
Torn Curtain was pretty good too. It was trying to eke its way in there, but I think it's number four on my list.
Yeah, I think I would go Marky Moon, Friction, and Guiding Light. I really like Guiding Light. I thought that was a good song. I would go with those as my three favorite songs. So that's, I suppose that brings us to the big question is, would you listen to this album again?
Yeah, I think I probably would.
Yeah, I definitely would too. I mean, I think it's really interesting, and it's unique. It is a very unique album. I mean, it's too bad that it only sold 80,000 copies, and it's too bad that it only sold that much when it was released. But yeah, I would definitely listen to this again, and I can see why it was so influential on so many artists. But yeah, I guess we'll end the episode there. Thank you so much for listening if you made it this far. If you did enjoy the episode, please share it with your friends. And what you can do is just find one friend who you think will really enjoy this episode. Text it to them and tell them that they got to check it out. That's what I want you to do right now. And just spread the word, and just share it with anybody who you think would be interested in this sort of thing. And you can also check out polyphonicpress.com, and there's lots of cool stuff there. You can get all the episodes that we've put out so far. And if you do feel inclined, you can help us out on Patreon. Just go to patreon.com/polyphonicpress, and you can get these episodes the day before that they go live, and get a shout out at the end of these episodes. And I think that just about does it. I'm Jeremy Boyd.
I'm John Van Dyke.
Take it easy.